You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
People pursue careers in the food industry for many reasons. Some think they'd be happy creating delicious dishes in a steamy kitchen. Others dream of achieving fame and fortune as a celebrity chef. Dorothy Kent Hamilton knows something about what it takes to survive in the food world. She's the founder of the French Culinary Institute, the host of a TV series called Chef Stories, and most recently the author of Love What You Do, Building a Career in the Culinary Industry. She joins me now, along with one of America's most famous chefs, Tom Colicchio, who wrote the foreword for her book. He's seen more than his share of wannabe star chefs as head judge of the Bravo reality show Top Chef. Mr. Colicchio is the owner and executive chef of the Kraft restaurants in New York and around the country, and his latest restaurant, Colicchio & Sons, opened last month in Manhattan. I'm very pleased to welcome Ms. Hamilton and Chef Colicchio back to our show. Hi.
Thank you, Leonard.
And so we can avoid all confusion before we start, do you say culinary or culinary?
I say culinary.
I say culinary.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to say culinary just for the heck of it.
Okay.
Dorothy, do you think a lot of people embarking on a culinary career have overblown expectations?
Probably. I think Tom writes about that in his foreword. I don't think they have overblown expectations. If you work hard, I think you can get somewhere in this profession. But the point is that you have to do your homework. You have to pay your dues. And if you do that and you are patient, you will get where you're going. Maybe not to where Tom has gotten on TV and as one of the top chefs in the world, but you will definitely find a very worthwhile profession and fulfilling.
Well, I have a friend who has a restaurant, and she has a wonderful executive chef who does everything that she asks perfectly, and she encourages him to do his own stuff, and it always turns out to be a bit of a disaster. There is a difference between being able to cook well and being able to be a chef with your own vision, isn't there?
Well, yeah, yes, of course there is. You know, there's something that's I think most people miss when they think about running a professional kitchen. One thing is to know how to cook. The other thing is to know how to organize the kitchen in a way where you can expedite food and do, you know, a certain amount of covers that are going to actually, you know, make money and keep the place open and do it in an organized fashion. If it was only about recipes, you can buy the French Laundry cookbook and be Thomas Keller. It's not the case. And so there's a lot more that goes into it. And I think when you talk about expectations, it all depends on what the expectation is. If the expectation is to go to the French Culinary Institute and become a TV personality, then you're doing the wrong thing.
But Dorothy, what percentage go on to even run their own restaurants, do you know?
A small percentage, because as Tom said, running a restaurant is not just being a good cook. There is a lot of skill sets that need to be done. You have to be a business person. You have to be an entrepreneur. You have to be a manager. You have to have stomach to take the risk to do it. And at the end of the day, you have to be a damn good cook.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you have to be able to encourage and get the most out of the people that are working there. You know, I guess I take this a little personally right now because so many people are saying, oh, well, you're back in the kitchen. Well, I never left the kitchen. I'm in my restaurants. I'm in the kitchens. Chefs don't cook. Cooks cook. Mm-hmm. And I use this analogy. If you go to see a piece of classical music, the composer is probably been dead for hundreds of years. The players play the instruments. The conductor is conducting them. So as a chef, you're conducting the people who are cooking.
Is that the way it's always been? When you opened your first restaurant, what was it, Mondrian?
Yes, I was working the pass. I was expediting, and they're my recipes, my ideas, my menu, my way of managing the kitchen. Mm-hmm. But you're not in there cooking. In fact,
and you didn't miss it? Wasn't that part of the fun in the
place? A lot of the cooking happens. See, there's also line cooking and then cooking. There's a lot that happens in the prep, and you're doing that. You're working on new dishes. But when the restaurant's open and service starts, the cooks are cooking. You're overseeing. You know, by evidence of my arm here, you can see I'm still cooking. I'm still getting burns.
Burn marks.
But it's more to that. But I think that, you know, the culinary schools now, I think that they see the cooking shows and they get into it for the wrong reasons. And you have to be passionate. You have to really want to learn how to cook and love that. And everything else will come.
Well, wait. But, you know, you have writers who aspire to be great authors and, you know, people who go to Broadway and want to be a great you know, singer, dancer, or
actor.
You
don't want to squelch
that.
And
you have to have that passion.
Right.
And the thing is, you know, to get to Carnegie Hall, it's practice, practice, practice. All I'm saying is it's the same thing. And then you have to be best of class like yourself.
Without a doubt.
To get to that rarefied level. But if you do what you love, I don't care what it is, you never feel like you're working.
Mm-hmm.
You never, you know, sacrifice too much. You're just there throwing yourself in it. And I think the greatest, you know, crime is when someone's doing something because their parents wanted them to do it or they feel they have to do that. And it's hard. Those are the people who don't want to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
But I am sure cooks in your kitchen are thrilled to be in your kitchen. That's an achievement just in itself. And I bet they are excited to get up in the morning and come and cook and do what they love.
But don't you think there's also a certain psychological type that gets involved in this field? The word hospitality is applied. And pretty much every chef that I have met has had a certain sense of hospitality that you mm-hmm. don't necessarily see in other people. They want to do something to please other people.
Well, that's exactly right. I think that cooking is that expression. And once you realize that, it takes away all of the sort of a lot of the nonsense that you see in kitchens where they won't do certain things. And so if you start with the answer is yes, because from a hospitality standpoint, then it makes a lot of the decisions easier.
You know, Chef Alain Seyac, who's our executive dean, said...
He used to be at Le Cirque.
At mm-hmm. Le Cirque, yeah. He says at orientation to students, if you don't love people, get out of this profession right now. And, you know, a chef is behind the door, so the hospitality of meeting and greeting isn't what he means. He said, you're going to do the most intimate act. You are going to cook for something people put into mm-hmm. their body. So it isn't about you. It's about them.
Right. But, you know, the other thing, and we can all sort of, I guess, it would be nice to think that everybody who's going to culinary school, they're going to go on to become chefs and run their own restaurants. But a lot of them aren't there for that. And what's happened in the last 20 years in our industry is that there are many other things you can do. You can write about food. You could do TV production work where you need someone who's behind the scenes doing the production work. There's catering. There's blogs that, you know, whether or not you care for them at all, they're out there. So there are
you
other...
You can do all of Julia Child's recipes and then write a book about it.
Write a book and become a... Right, and make a movie. So there's a lot of other things that can come out of, you know, going to school and getting the basics. I mean, really... I really think if you want to be a food writer, food professional, you should have some experience. You know, I think the best food writers do.
So with that in mind, did you go to culinary school?
I did not go, no.
Because you are of a previous generation where you did it the other way, kind of the apprenticeship and working there?
Well, twofold. When I applied to the Culinary Institute, you had to work in two restaurants before they would accept you. And... By the fourth restaurant, I was working at the Quilted Giraffe in New York. This is when I was on 2nd Avenue, and I was made a sous chef after 3 months. So at that point, I decided I didn't want to go. Also,
because that was pretty much the best restaurant in New York at the time.
Could have been, yeah. And also, my family didn't have the money to send me to culinary school. And number two, you know, I most likely would have been diagnosed with ADD if I was a kid now at school, and I had a hard time sort of focusing on certain subjects. But I think that's actually helped me, because when I read Jacques Pepin's book, La Technique, because I had a hard time following recipes and reading recipes and getting through them. And when I read Jacques' book, La Technique, it sort of a light switch went on, and I realized that it wasn't about the recipe, it was about techniques and methods.
That book really revolutionized teaching.
So.
And I've seen him do demonstrations at the French Culinary Institute.
Yeah.
Does he teach there?
Oh, yeah. No, he's there 6 weeks a year in space during the year. And I think Jacques says it best when a young aspiring cook says to him, what does it take to be a chef? He says, you know what? I have a love of painting, and he is a great amateur painter. Mm-hmm. And he says, but you know, I know I'm not a professional. He said, because with cooking, anything I think about in my head, I can execute with my hand. And my hand is just an extension of my brain. He says, but with painting, I'll want to do something, but I don't have the technique. And that's how I know I'm not a professional painter. And so that's what I mean when a young cook wants to be a chef. You have to, you know, learn
right.
all of those basic techniques mm-hmm. and then some.
Right. That's how I know I'm not a professional musician. I play guitar, but I can't do that.
Right.
My guest, Dorothy Cann Hamilton, who's written a book called Love What You Do, Building a Career in the Culinary Institute. It's published by iUniverse. And Tom Colicchio, who wrote the introduction for the book. You you didn't go to cooking school, yeah. but you learned the way that cooks learned in the past, which is you were a lackey for a while and just had to work your way up?
Well, there is, you know, the idea of in France, there was always the apprentice system. You couldn't go on to further your degree, and so your parents dragged you to the local restaurant and said, you know, make my son a cook or a chef. Or
you
went to
the
blacksmith, or you went to... No, actually, I skipped that. I started bussing tables when I was about 15. And then from there, I always wanted to get into the kitchen. And they, as soon as I graduated high school, they literally threw me in the kitchen. I loved it. And before that, I had some experience working as a short order cook at a swim club my parents belonged to. But I just absolutely loved it. I loved the lifestyle, and so that was it for me.
So you worked your way up, and you wound up at Quilted Giraffe, and then you got your own restaurant, Mondrian. But mm-hmm. you weren't a part owner or anything. You were the hired help there?
No, I was there was a chef by the name of Dennis Foy who opened the restaurant, and he had several partners. One of them, Robert Scott, is still my partner today. Left the restaurant at a certain point, and they brought me on as the chef.
And then you left when that restaurant closed. You opened up Gramercy Tavern with Danny.
Right. When that restaurant closed, Danny and I, we met at the Aspen Food & Wine Festival the year that, 1991, when Michael Romano and I both received Best New Chef from Food & Wine Magazine. And the following year, I went back, and I knew the restaurant was about to close. And so I sat down with Danny and said, you know, I think you like what I do, and I like what you do. Why don't we do a restaurant together? And that was
Gramercy. How old were you at the time?
I was about 29 or 30.
Because, Dorothy, there are some people who will tell you that we're seeing too many chefs who are too young to really open up their own restaurants, but want to. They're quite ambitious. They find an interesting, inexpensive spot in, I guess it's no longer Brooklyn, but for a while it used to be Lower East Side and then Brooklyn. And some of them succeed. A great majority of them fail.
I agree. You know, 25 years ago when I opened FCI, the French chefs all said, well, you have to work 10 years and then, you know, 5 years as a sous and it's going to take 15, 20 years. David Chang graduated FCI and 3 years later he was David Chang winning the Beard Award.
Bobby Flay was also very young.
And Bobby Flay within 2 years, within 6 months was the chef at Miracle Grill. And I remember scolding him. And saying, no, you have to pay your dues.
Yeah, but Tom, don't you think it's because those chefs happen to be particularly talented? There are any number of others who would have almost be guaranteed failures if they started out so soon.
I think they're the exceptions that prove the rule. And I think that you know, kids coming out of culinary school, they need to take it slow. Mm-hmm. David, you know, it was interesting because when David worked for me, we wouldn't let him work the hotline.
Why?
He wasn't up to speed. I mean, he really wasn't.
He went to Japan?
Before he went to Japan, he came back a couple months later, and I think he went to work for Andrew. But he had to grow, and I think that, you know, if you look at what he's doing now compared to the first restaurant. So this is a 5 year span between, or maybe 4 year span between when he opened Noodle Bar and Co.
Yeah.
So he spent a lot of time on the job in his kitchen.
Yeah.
Sort of honing his craft. Yes. So I know, and if you look at Noodle Bar compared to Co, there was a simplicity at Noodle Bar that changed, and he grew dramatically in those 5 years. And again, I think that if he had worked under another chef, it may not happen for him because I think that he needed to express himself. There was something inside of him that he had to get out.
He's a visionary.
Oh, he is.
Now,
we're talking
executive chef vision that people follow there.
No, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And I remember someone doing an interview and they asked me, well, didn't I see this? And I said, no, we completely missed it.
Well, when you are talking to the contestants in Top Chef,
yeah.
I'm sure you see that same kind of fire, but not necessarily. And some of them seem to be rather impatient to make it, despite the fact that they don't seem to be ready.
Well, I think this season that just passed, I think that the chefs were ready. There were four in particular that were very good. But again, it's a TV show. It's a little different. We're not allowed to interact with them at all when we're shooting. I can't talk to them. I can only talk to them when we're on camera, so I don't get to know them at all. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what they're doing really. Mm-hmm. So it's
then later you see the show and you find out what they were talking about and what they were saying about you in the kitchen.
Yeah, but
you know what I love? They all respect him. You know, I think he's really a great chef, and they recognize that.
And they seem to respect the other top chefs who come on as mm-hmm. weekly.
All the judges, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the judges that we bring on. I mean, this year we had, you know, Joel Robuchon. I mean,
they're the real deal. It's nice to see a reality show with a real deal, you know.
You know, it doesn't get much bigger than that. I mean, you know, sitting around a table with him and Danielle and you know, so many other great chefs. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a big deal.
Mm. Dorothy, how did you get the idea to found the French Culinary Institute in the first place?
Love to eat. Uh-huh. Wanted to love what I do. I was in education.
Well, there were other cooking schools. There was the CIA upstate.
Only, and Johnson and Wales. And, you know, there really wasn't, and the food in 1980 was not great. And, you know, we didn't even have Korean vegetable stores. It was, right. you know, bad iceberg lettuce in the mm-hmm. supermarkets. And I said, you know, all the food is great in France. Why is that? And we have great products here. And it was education. I believe in education. And so I saw this great school in Paris and brought it over here.
Yeah. And that was the French Culinary Institute.
Yes.
And now you also have an Italian academy that's separate. Do you find that the attitudes about what it takes to make a chef are different?
Yes. You know, the Italian Culinary Academy is located in the same location, but it's a separately licensed school. And we work in conjunction with the Italians. The students are here for 10 weeks, and then they go 18 weeks to Italy. And 9 weeks they're in a school there, and 9 weeks they're working in the top restaurants of Italy. And it's a very different feel to the two schools.
Now, it has been pointed out, it's not always the case, that in France the chef is usually a man. And in Italy, the chef is usually the wife of the owner of the restaurant who works out in the front. Tom, you grew up in an Italian mm-hmm. family, and yet you wound up cooking French food.
I started out cooking French food. I didn't work. When I started working 30 years ago, the Italian restaurants were very different than they are now. Mm-hmm. And I cook at home. I cook more sort of Italian style, more olive oil based versus butter based, where, you know, whatever I do on my own. But I don't think that I can. I wouldn't characterize my food as French. It's hard to put a label on what I do. It's not French. It's not Italian. It's
a new American cuisine or
It's a multi. I think it's contemporary food. Whether you're in Spain, Italy, France, America, Australia, it's contemporary cooking.
Could I put a slant on that? The French are great at codification. And if you make an analogy to ballet is the French codified ballet right after the courts of Louis XVI. And, you know, we have the terminology, we have the steps on getting there, and they did the same thing with cuisine. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about French food, we're really talking about classic technique.
Right. And technique, and French technique now has had an impact on other kinds of foods. In Mexico, there are some people who are concerned that French technique is replacing the traditional Mexican technique because everybody is learning the French technique. I don't know if that applies to Italian food as well.
Mm. Well, if you go into the finer haute cuisine or higher restaurants, white tablecloth restaurants in Italy, they will be following some French techniques.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we're thinking trattoria style.
Right.
You know, pizza is not a French technique.
But that's just it. What is Italian cooking? It varies all over from region to region.
What is French cooking? Do you have to be a Frenchman to do it? You have to use French products.
Up in Alsace, that's French. It's French cooking too, right?
Right.
It's very different. In Mediterranean, there's French cooking that's very different. So
they don't have wine in Normandy.
Right. It's very hard to pigeonhole it. And I think that too often that's what we do with food.
Now, you mentioned that when you first got into the business, it was a very different food climate in America. You couldn't get Korean ingredients, for example. Have you seen a change in the attitudes about the people who come to restaurants? Are they much more knowledgeable today than they were in the past?
I think yes and no. And again, I think TV plays into that. You end up with some people who are there because they saw something on TV. But you know, I don't pass judgment on who comes. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care if it's the first restaurant experience you ever had in your life, as long as you leave having a good experience.
Well, but they're going to order differently, aren't they?
Well, they have to order what's on the menu. So, you know,
no, you know what I love is the kids.
Yeah.
Because of TV today, the children are so much more aware. And I think this may help in this whole re-education of the American palate to help health-wise. We don't want to use mm-hmm. the word health. But, you know, if you just eat deliciously, you can eat well and healthily. And that's what I hope is going to happen, this revolution with TV.
Yeah, we had two young children in last night. And they were great. They were well-behaved. And they came into the kitchen to say hi. And they, you know, it's nice to see them. But I think the other thing, you talk about products and what's available now, what we're seeing is you know, farmers who most likely would have left the farm because it was hard to make money sort of come back to it. In fact, I was out in Pennsylvania in the fall, early fall, and went to visit a farm called Colton Organics. And the farmer's name is Tom Colton, third generation organic farmer in Pennsylvania, who no irrigation on his farm, and he's growing artichokes. Mm. He goes twice a year to either France and Italy to collect seeds, to meet with other farmers. Mm. And this is someone who's really, really into it. Mm. And he's out there in Lancaster, PA. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing stuff.
And I think, you know, all of these young, educated people getting into the food industry.
Right.
So we have a recession. People don't stop eating. And so what do we have now? More trucks, you know, gourmet truck. People going around and selling schnitzels and things and gourmet ice creams. I think you're just going to see more and more interest.
Well, do you find that people who come to the school are more sophisticated about food than they were when you opened the place?
Oh, definitely. And we our average age student is 30. They're a career changer. And they've eaten quite well, usually, and have not a sophisticated palate, but they're aware.
Mm-hmm. Now, on a totally different angle here, a listener hearing you talk about your burns asks, what's the best way to treat a burn?
Run cold water under it and leave it alone.
Aloe in the kitchen?
I have aloe at home. I usually just run cold water under it and leave it. I don't cover it. If it blisters up a lot, you should actually pop that and then cover it.
Hmm.
But no, it's just, you know, I don't know.
Ew.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of first aid for it, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. You know, the problem is when you burn yourself and you're still working and you're anything hot, it's really painful.
The first week at school is funny. You know, yeah. They start with cuts and they graduate to burns.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, how are people hired these days in restaurants? Do they come to you with the resume from the school?
Sure. I mean, there's also externship programs, so we get to meet some of the students then. But, you know, it's been tough lately. I mean, I remember 27 years ago when you opened the restaurant, I was like, wow, this is great because, you know, they're going to school in Manhattan, so the idea of coming to work in Manhattan is not so foreign. But nowadays, we have a real shortage of cooks.
Mm-hmm.
And again,
a shortage, really?
Yes.
You tried all
the
cooking schools.
Well, it used to be in the old days, you'd want to work in New York, San Francisco, L.A., Chicago. That's it. Now, you know, you can go work for Michael Simon in Cleveland. You can go and you work anywhere and find good kitchens to work in. So a lot of the kids, they come out of school and want to pay heavy, you know, big rents in New York and deal with the hassles of living here. So it's been very difficult to find cooks.
Michael Mina from San Francisco comes to the school twice a year
to recruit students. Sure.
Yeah.
When you hire someone, is there a special test that you make them try to see if they're going to be good?
No. When I was hiring people, when I was at early stages of Gramercy, and I'm actually starting to get more involved with the new restaurant, first thing I do is have them come in and just watch. I don't want them to pick up a knife. I just want them to watch. And you actually see just how they stand in the kitchen, how they move around the kitchen, whether or not they're comfortable in the kitchen, number one. What I want them to do is I want them to see how we produce food. I want them to see the food, and I want to make sure they like what we do. Because maybe you don't. Maybe this isn't the kind of food for you. I'm not, you know, doing Asian influenced food, and maybe they want to learn Swedish food and go work for Marcus. But I want to make sure that they want to learn what we do. That's number one. Then I'll ask them to come in and put a knife in their hand and see if they can prep. At that point, then I'll either hire them or not. But usually, I'll get some consensus around the kitchen to see if they want that person in.
And Dorothy, when somebody starts at your school, do you get a sense of who might make it one in one area or another? Who's going to wind up being the food writer? Who's going to wind up being a line cook?
No.
Who's going to wind up being a brilliant chef?
No, you know, half of the people
management?
That come to school have worked in the industry already in some way, shape, or form. And the other half, they're so new, you know, they don't know how to hold the knife. And so after 6 months, it's a very, you know, it's a total immersion program. You can't really see who's going to super blossom. And in fact, Bobby Flay was in our very first class, and he was 19 and not quite focused, and he was voted least likely to succeed. And, you know, go show him,
okay.
Bobby. Go show him.
Yeah.
And what happened?
Oh, look at him. He's fabulous. Yeah, but, he was 19, and, he just had to mature. It was great for him to be around more mature people, and he loved it. He had a passion for cooking. He didn't have a passion for high school. He had a passion for cooking.
Right. Mm-hmm. I've been talking with Dorothy Kent Hamilton, who's the founder of the French Culinary Institute. She had her own TV series for a while, and she's now written a book called Love What You Do, Building a Career in the Culinary Industry, which is published by iUniverse. Also with us, Tom Colicchio, the 5-time James Beard Award winner and the chef owner of the various craft restaurants, and now most recently Colicchio and Sons, and of course star of TV, screen, and whatever else. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.